Now we will hear from our second speaker, Christine.
Hi, everyone. So nice to be here. And thank you, Mandy. I mean, it's so refreshing and great to hear a very strong big book-based program, and that's excellent. I loved it, and I loved your pictures. And I don't have any pictures. And there's a reason for that. It's because of my anorexia. I'm nervous, and I'm not usually nervous. It's terrible. I have been in programs since, this is my anniversary month, actually. I came into program at Thanksgiving time in 1987. So 24 years I've been around. And I came into program through treatment. I'm someone who got really, really physically sick with my addictions, plural. And I was in treatment for another addiction, and I thought I was so tricky with my food thing. Mm-hmm. I was so sneaky with my anorexia and bulimia, I thought. And really, I didn't even know it was an addiction or a disorder. I just had used that all my life to deal with food. And it was my diet plan, I guess, is the best way I describe it. I didn't think there was anything wrong with what I did. And that will tell you how much denial I was in, because I was barely 100 pounds. I was so sick that I had been hospitalized a number of times already. And no one had ever confronted me on my eating disorder until then. And so I had to take a hard look at it, and believe me, I was really angry about having to do that. But to backtrack a little, what I wanted to do while I was sharing, what I wanted everyone to think about is their abstinence, their definition of abstinence, and maybe how it began and how it's changed through the years, and perhaps what you might like to see in the future as a change in your abstinence, because I can tell you mine has changed a lot. And I now know, after being around program for a while and working these steps, I do know that my disease really is not about the food or the calories or the size of my body or any of that stuff that I always focused on. And I had to bring my little cheat sheet just in case I forget the words. But my problem was always about my skewed perception of myself. I have this inability to perceive myself as a whole person. I always perceived myself as just a shell of a person. And so that's where the thing that I could control was my food and my body size. And that's what I thought I was about. And then I lack perspective of myself in the world. You know, I have an inability to perceive of myself and place myself in this world with people and all the activities in it. I have no ability to do that. And I now know from working the steps and being in this program why I came to that conclusion. It's a very narrow conclusion. It's a very immature, very naive, lack of wisdom, whatever you want to say about it. And that's how I arrived at this place in my mind of who I thought I was and how I thought I was in the world. And it goes clear back to my childhood. You know, I'm older. I grew up in the 50s and 60s were my home time. My parents, for all intents and purposes, and family life seemed normal. It was normal to me. My father was in the war. He was in the Navy. He came back. He went to school on the GI Bill. He was the first in his family to get a college education. He got a decent job. He was an engineer. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. We went to church. They had friends. I mean, we had pets. Everything seemed pretty normal, right? But now I know there was a lot of fear basis in our family. My father was 8 years older than my mother, and he came back from the war, and he took this barely out of high school young bride of his, and they went they left New York and went all the way to godforsaken Arizona for him to go to college. And that had to be a radical change for my mother. The environment in the 1949 in southern Arizona, pretty hostile. Lots of bugs there. So he took her away from family and all that. And guess what? Of course, I arrived. I wouldn't say unwanted, but maybe unscheduled. There we were, and she was full of fear. And her way to contend with the fear was to be very controlling of her children. And I mean, beyond sheltering, I was really imprisoned. I'm grateful today for a lot of the disciplines that she taught me. Because of that imprisonment, I went straight to school, straight home. There were no activities. There were no friends allowed to come over. There was no talking on the phone. We could go to church and have that little social thing, but that was it. And I was unable to grow in a social context. I had no skills for being around people at all, even my fellow kids. I could be at school, because that was different. There was a focus on learning, and I could show off I could be teacher's pet and all that good stuff and get good grades. And beyond that, I was nothing. And that's where my perception of myself came in. I was nothing. And from an early age, I learned that the only thing that I might have control of was food and body size. And I wasn't even thinking about it in that context, but I was the miserable kid in the family who could get the Halloween goodies, and I'd still have them next Halloween because I would be that rigid and strict about it, while the other kids, I had two siblings, they finished theirs within the week, and they'd be so angry at me. How can you do that? And it was just a matter of trying to control what was really an out-of-control little life I had going on, but I didn't know it. And so my anorexia and that thinking progressed all the way through school, all the way through college, all the way into my early adulthood. And it wasn't until I got married, right, second year of college, I too had a child that wasn't necessarily unwanted, but certainly I was not prepared. And I left that marriage, because that's all I knew to do. I didn't think I could be a mother. I certainly didn't think I could be a wife. And here I was trying to be both. And the anorexia was rampant. I would do things like eat a bowl of cereal a day or an apple a day and think that I was functioning all right. And never thought of it as a disorder or an addiction. It wasn't until my mid-20s that I also started drinking. And almost simultaneously, I learned how to throw up. So excellent, you know, what seemed like a great solution to me. I could eat a little more, I could drink, I could purge, and I could stay the same size. Again, I was on my own, I had this little child, I was working, thank God, but that's all I was. To work, home. Take care of the child, stay home. That's all I did. And I also have learned from because my family I thought was normal, right? And I didn't know of any history of addiction or alcoholism in my family per se. Now I know there are little threads of it throughout my relatives, but these diseases of addiction hit my immediate family very hard. There was me with the anorexia, bulimia, alcoholism, my father full-blown alcoholic, my mother alcoholic and then prescription drug addict, and my sweet sister, who was obese, died at age 43 from her obesity. My father died an active alcoholic, And he died 11 months after my sister died. And once my sister died, who was his favorite, he stopped eating and went from an obese man to skin and bones and died. It's horrific, this stuff we have going on in my family. And when I look at it, it doesn't seem like we came from such dysfunction. But there was huge dysfunction. And this advancing alcoholism all this time in my life that I didn't recognize and didn't know about. And the only reason I am here is because, like I said in the beginning, my second husband recognized my illness. He didn't probably know exactly what it was, but he did know that I was sick and needed help and got me to hospitals and treatment facilities a number of times. I'm someone who's had a lot of therapy, a lot of psychiatry done for me, counseling, lots and lots of things, and I was still of the mindset that I was only this shell of a person, not worth recovering. What I really wanted to do was disappear, if I could just get small enough and disappear so no one knew I was around. That was my goal, and that was my inability to perceive of myself and place myself in the world. I couldn't function. And I thought I could only function if I had control of this food and weight and size and all that. And when I ended up in treatment, and they said, you've got to stop all this. You are going to die. Honest to God, you are going to die. Don't you get that? And it took me a number of times of almost dying to get that. Because I didn't get that there was recovery. I couldn't let it in. I had been to meetings from the very beginning. 1984, I probably went to my first meeting. Couldn't let it in. Couldn't let the idea that I could recover, that I could change my perception of myself, that my belief system was what was wrong, you know, and that I didn't have to control the food and my size to be safe in the world. I didn't have to be so small I could disappear to be safe. You know, and these are some of the things that I mean, it's been 24 years. I'm still working on this. I don't always feel safe, but I love coming to meetings. I still go to 5 a week because I feel safe here. I think I can share almost anything in these rooms, and I have. And you guys are my family since most of my family is gone. I have one sibling. My daughter's alive. She does not have addiction problems. Thank you, God. My brother escaped the addiction problems. Don't know how, but he's 9 years younger than I am. So he and I do have a relationship, but it seems like I hardly have any family at all, you know, and that all my family has been taken by this disease. So it's really crucial that we come here and that we work a strong program of recovery to stay here and stay okay. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about my idea of abstinence. When I first got abstinent, I was in treatment and had a forced abstinence, but I kind of love it because I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I would not have done it. I was in a place, I was 37 at the time. Most of the people in there were all women and all young women, probably 20 or younger, 20 years old or younger. And so I felt out of place, but they served us 3 abstinent meals. I had never had an abstinent meal that I kept down. And they locked the bathrooms, and they watched you like a hawk, and they did not let you exercise. So I had to exist in this place for a full 30 days, eating abstinently, and getting to understand and to try that on and live what that was like to be abstinent. And trust me, it was very hard. I thought in my mind that I would gain 25 pounds in those 30 days. I actually lost about 5 or 6. So at the time, I had gone from my alcoholism treatment facility to the eating disorder treatment facility for 30 days, and I had to go back. and I had to be on my own, and I started coming to OA, and I didn't like what you guys had to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did not want to give up what I perceived was control. Mm-hmm. It was the only thing I had control of. Certainly, I couldn't drink again. I was going to die. But I came to OA, and I don't think I shared at all. I would listen, but not share. And so my early abstinence was nothing more than, I won't purge my food. Nothing more than that. That's all I could do. And actually, I kept that definition of abstinence for a long, long time, years and years in program. I didn't think I had to look at my diet because I still had the exercise and it was still working for me. And I thought I was in moderation with everything, so why mess with it? You know, I'm not throwing up anymore, so I'm good. And I can come to meetings and I can say I'm abstinent, right? Well, about 5 years ago, I started not being able to maintain my weight. I hadn't changed nothing, but my weight was creeping up, probably due to my age. And probably also due to the fact that I had refused, I was unwilling to look at my food plan. I'd come to meetings and share about it. Some of you may remember. I say, you know, I think my food plan needs a little tweaking here, but I am unwilling to do it. And I was unwilling to do it until I was nearly 20 pounds heavier than I am today. And I finally got scared enough to say, you know, I better look at this thing. And the thing that I was unwilling to give up was sugar, because I didn't eat a lot of sugar. But I finally became, after asking, praying for years to be willing, I gave up the sugar. And I was amazed how the weight came off and how much better I felt and how, I think Mandy was sharing about it too, I am perfectly satisfied with my meal plan. I don't crave the sugar. I don't need the flour. I think it's amazing, and it is so simple and easy to do my food plan now. And I love it. I just love it, and I wish I had been willing to do it earlier. Thank you, Nancy. Now, the thing I'm going to briefly touch upon, and this is hard for me, because I can see that there's an area that I need of abstinence and recovery that I need in the future. And I have been unwilling to look at this too. Because from the very beginning with this deal with my size and wanting to disappear and wanting to be just boy-like, I have put a severe dent in any sexuality I might be able to exhibit or participate in. I've been through two marriages. My two husbands were very kind about it, but I never, never could give myself in that way. I have to admit that when I left my second marriage, I went to live with a woman thinking maybe that was the answer. That's not the answer. The answer is I am very anorexic in my thinking about myself. My perception is still skewed. I can't trust to be with somebody else and have them that close to me. And this is something I really, really want to work on. And I've prayed about it and thought about it for years. And I thought, I'm going to come to this meeting today and I'm going to say that out loud. Because we don't talk about sexuality stuff in meetings very often. But I know it's a big part that I am missing. You know, I'm missing because that's the way I established my little presence in this world. And now I'm over 60, you know. So one day it's going to be too late to address this. So anyway, I thought I would do that, say that out loud today, and so I appreciate you all listening. I thank you very much. That's it.
Thank you very much. If anybody would like to share about abstinence or anything else.
My name's Chris, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And a sugar addict. And I really appreciate this topic, and I love coming to these, the idea day and the candlelight and the brunch, and And any of the, you know, any of them, if I can come, I will come. Because, one, where can you do something for a $5 donation that is so beneficial? Any other workshop, you know, I go to is $350 or, you know, something like that. So, so, you know, it's like, why would I not come? And the whole abstinence piece, I think, is so tough for us as food addicts. I've been in the program for 4 years now. This is my anniversary month, end of October, beginning of November. Certain holiday that happens at the end of October was what brought me in to this program. I have been blessed with being able to let go of sugar for the last 4 years. And that's, you know, thanks to you guys. When I came in, I didn't think, I was like, I was still in my head, moderation. And that works for many people in a way, but for me, it didn't. And I've been, just started listening. I think this is the same woman that came a couple of years back to Serenity in the Rockies and did a ABCs of Abstinence retreat, and I heard about that from different people, and some of the things that they had to say were intriguing to me, so I ordered the tapes and have been listening to those. And what's helpful for me, because we do have to take, you know, the tiger out of the cage two to three times a day, you know, depending on, you know, what our medical issues are or how we set that up. I heard one person say that they felt that that process is kind of like having an alcoholic take a couple of sips of tequila at the beginning of every meal, you know. So when I first started, I was like, well, you know, I don't want to take anything away from, you know, I mean, I am so grateful to Alcoholics and to AA and to the Big Book that this exists, and so I don't want to, you know, say anything about that, but now, 4 years in, I'm like, no, this is harder. It just definitely is harder to have a food addiction in the sense of having to deal with food, you know, throughout every day. And so I can just say it's harder, at least for me, it's harder. I recognize the difficulty of that piece. And I just like, you know, one of my things is perfectionism, though I call it anti-perfectionism, because it's kind of like, well, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm not going to bother, you know, is my approach to perfectionism. So forget it, you know, I can't do it perfectly, I'm not going to bother. So it's perfectionism, but it ends up being anti-perfectionism around me. So to be able to have something black and white, like alcoholics have, to be able to let that go and to find something black and white is what I'm hoping these tapes will help me with, because I love the fuzziness of OA. You know, I love the fact that we each have our own way of defining abstinence, and we can find ways, you know, that because everyone is different, and what we need to change, what my alcoholic food is different than your alcoholic food. And some people can eat all foods and just eat them in moderation, and there's so many different ways to put this together. And yet we all have the same program, we all have the same 12 steps, we all have the same tools. And for me, it is helpful to have something in that that's black and white. And what I appreciate about this concept, and what I hope it will help move me forward, is that, you know, if I can pick something that's easy, you know, that is doable, that I can be successful at, because part of what happens is I feel like, well, I blew it, you know, and then, you know, go it into, as I heard someone else call it, effort mode. You know, it's like I blew it, and so it doesn't really matter. But if I can have something that's I can successfully do, and so far that has been to let go of the sugar. You know, so I've done that. That's simple. That's my alcoholic food. I can let go of that, and now I want to find a way to do that is about the amounts, because that's what I continue to struggle with, so that I can work, you know, find, I can say, this is the black and white piece of it, and it's livable, and it's doable, and I can be successful at it, so thank you.
I'm Marcia. I'm a compulsive overeater.
And thank you both for sharing. I really appreciate hearing your story. And, you know, I think it's really good that we talk about abstinence and we talk about food, because a lot of meetings, we don't talk much about that. And that's why we're all here. So it's like, I think it's really helpful to talk about it. As we were looking at Idea Day and talking about it, it always makes me go back to when I first got into program and to think back to that and how that was and how that's different now. And it took me a long time in program before I ever lost any weight. I was in program for a long, many years. And I didn't have tons of weight to lose, but I definitely am a compulsive overeater. And I know that had I not gotten into program, I would have just continued gaining weight. I'm pretty certain of that. And so when I got into program, I pretty much quit gaining weight, but I also didn't lose weight for, I don't even know how many years I was in program before that happened. I had like 15 pounds that I felt I needed to lose, and the doctor had said to me, probably 7 years into program, you should probably lose 10 pounds. And it was like, yeah, you know, I've been thinking the same thing for a lot of years. And finally, a couple years after the doctor said that to me, I did go to a program in addition to OA that, you know, helped me develop a food plan that worked and that I continue to use today. The part of, for me, that's hard, when I'm here and I'm around my familiar food and my meetings and all the supports that work, I'm fine. But we travel quite a bit, and part of our traveling at times is riding bikes and exercising. Those are the hardest things for me to figure out, because I do need more food when I'm being really physically active. And, of course, I always think I need more food than I really need. So, you know, figuring out that balance of what I really do need extra and dealing with restaurants is tough. That's a hard one. But I'm not willing to give that up. You know, I want to live, and I want to do those things. So I continue to work on that. And so that's why I think it's so good to do this kind of a meeting and to talk about it and to hear what works for other people, what other people have figured out, because my abstinence has changed over time, and how I do food has changed over time. And I think it's just so good that we can come together and talk about that and do that, and I'm really glad you're all here. Thanks.
My name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And I really want to thank you guys for sharing. Thanks for your courage. Thank you very much for putting this on. Abstinence. I've been in this program twice. I've been in other programs a lot. Woman in OA one time told me, if you're not in at least 3 12-step programs, you're in denial. I'm not entirely sure that's true for everyone, but I know it's true for me. And abstinence in this program is, I got a much better idea of abstinence this time around. I was in about 18 years ago, and I lost 100 pounds, and things were great, and then I got cured, and oh God.
No, you didn't ignore that. Ignore it.
I just started. I didn't think it was that fast.
I'm sorry. I forgot to turn it off.
See, it's a bad idea to interrupt me because I lose my train of thought. It's so fragile. I have a much clearer idea, thank you, thanks to my sponsor, about a real picture of abstinence this time for me. What I did before worked. I mean, I lost 100 pounds. I was pretty happy. Life was good. I kept the weight off for about 8 years. But I quit working the tools of this program. And so I really appreciated, you know, what you shared, Mandy. Pounding on the book, you know, because I quit doing that. I quit going to OA meetings and figured, you know, God's in the other 12-step programs. And there's more guys. And I should tell you a story. I won't tell you that story, though. I quit going, and then I quit praying for abstinence. And I put 70 pounds back on. Well, it took several years, but I did it. And ended up feeling just as desperate, more desperate than ever before, because I kind of felt like I'd blown my chance. You know, that I had one chance and I blew it. And fortunately, I was wrong. But you know, in the big book, which I really loved hearing about from you, it says real clearly that booze is but a symptom. Alcohol is but a symptom. They don't say booze. It says alcohol is but a symptom. That's not really our problem. My problem with all these different addictions I have is that I have this God-shaped or love-shaped empty space in my heart, a great gaping hole in my heart, and I try to fill it with things that aren't God or love. And the abstinence is really essential to figure out, because it is that the drug of choice that I try to fill this hole with. But it's not really the problem. The problem is the hole. And the steps are so important. It's the only way out. Because the abstinence is just a symptom. I mean, what we need to be absent from is just a symptom. And I was with a friend the other day, and we were reading from the big book. In the foreword to the first editions, it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body." And my great-grand sponsor took his pudgy little finger, he needed this program, and pointed at that section, and he had me think about it. And he said, you know, they don't say this, but what really happened was Bill W. and Dr. Bob met in 1935. 4 years later, there were 100 men and women who were in recovery. But several thousand people had come to those first 100, and they were all dead. And it's like, I think in pictures, it's like after a battle, you know, you're on the top of the hill, and there's 100 of you standing there, still alive, but there's thousands of bodies all around you who didn't make it. And this book, it wasn't tablets from God, you know. They didn't get no stinking tablets, you know. What happened was they tried, in those 4 years, they tried all kinds of crazy, crazy things. I love reading about what they did in the beginning. They made them eat carol syrup and cabbage broth and all kinds of crazy things, and it didn't do anything. And they tried all kinds of things. They didn't know what they were doing. When the dust had cleared and these 100 people looked at each other, they thought, you know, we better write down what it was that we did, that us 100 people did in common, what we all did. Write that down, because that's what worked. All the other crazy things that people tried, all the other notions they tried, didn't work. And that's why I try real hard to everything I do, I try to make sure it's in the big book or can be reconciled with the big book, because I know it works. And unfortunately, many of the other ideas that people have don't work, and they get us killed. So I wanted to thank you very much for reminding me of that. I mean, it's important. This disease, the solution to this disease is the same 12 steps. same 12 steps, yeah. Yeah, it's 12. And the importance of sticking to those is just, it really matters. Thanks.
I wanted to just say briefly that my first abstinence was also institutionally enforced. Somebody fed me 3 meals a day, and what I learned from that, and I just wanted to share in the interest of service, is it was categories. It wasn't weighed and measured. It was, you know, you will have protein, starch, fruit for breakfast. You will have, and guess what? And also fat. You will eat this fat. And somebody who comes from counting, like I do, counting and label reading and all that other stuff, it was really, really important for me to limit my interactions with that evaluation. Is it too much? Is it too little? It's really has to be clear, has to be not so glamorous and not so, I'm not like looking in the fashion magazines and I'm not looking at the glamorous foods and I'm not looking at all that stuff. It has to be pretty simple and pretty straightforward, but not so much counting. So that's just for my abstinence, and that's all I got. We're going to take a short break, but before we do that, we have this lovely gift for all of you that Amy's going to tell you about. Oops.
Coupons to a restaurant?
Yeah. My name's Amy Food Addict Bulimic. Hi, and Jean actually came up with this. This is a really neat thing about to be abstinent. It's about willingness, not struggle. And it differentiates being willing to be abstinent versus trying to be abstinent. So in case people were leaving, we really want to make sure you had it. And I really encourage, in these times of sharing, and there'll be another time to do so, they told me if I want to get better, come up and talk. You know, take an opportunity of sharing where I'm at. That's the people get better to do so. The other thing is, my absence when I came in was 3 Last Suppers. I've always said it like that. They were such big meals that my husband-to-be thought I brought lunch and dinner for both of us. It was my lunch. And so somebody said, are you willing to run naked down Colfax, you know, to stay abstinent? And that registered with me. So I really want to share that absence is not another way to fail. And I think that's what happens in this program, going, I'm going to be like so-and-so, and then I can't do it, I failed. This kind of addresses that. And the other thing I hope people say, share, because it helps me, is what problems they're having with abstinence and sharing. It's just not the success stories. This is a disease of secrets, and telling on our secrets makes us one amongst many. So please keep that in mind. So I'll just pass this around so everybody can take it. We didn't want to do it at the end in case people left. And thank you so much, Jean. We all share what we find, and in 30 years, I've never seen this. I've been here in 30 years, and so I'm so grateful. So, thanks. So we'll just pass it around, and please feel free to use bathrooms and beverages, et cetera.